From New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
Hey, welcome to Live from America Podcast. This is Hatem, alongside me, Noam Dorman, owner of the legendary Comedy Cellar. And our guest today, comedian, writer, and one of the hosts of Boycast, one of my favorite podcasts, very popular podcast, Danny Polacek is here. He's back.
What's up? How's it going?
Long time. It's been a while, buddy.
Yeah, it's been, I don't know when the last time I was, 6 months ago, maybe?
Long time since that white supremacy thing, I guess, right? that started it all.
Which one was,
Remember that. And our guest of honor is Trent Steele. Trent is the president and national director of investigation operation for Anti-Predator Project. He held private investigation license in Florida since 2011, co-founded Anti-Predator Project with his wife, and it specializes in the criminal investigation into individuals and organizations involved in human trafficking and location and recovery of American children that have been bought and sold in the black market. Welcome to the show. And if you notice, his screen is off. If you're watching the show, if you're listening, you're okay. If you're watching the show, his screen is off because he's in the middle of an operation right now, so we can reveal his identity. Trent, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. If you ask my wife, it's because she'll tell you I've got a face that's made for radio and not TV. So that's why they're blacked out. But thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. What a job. You make us look bad.
you're giving me too much credit. Nothing that we do over at Anti-Predator Project would be possible without the men and women that volunteer their time to work with me. I mean, we've been doing this for about a decade. And when I say that I've got the best men and women in the world that are talented at what they do, the best in their industries, that volunteer their time to help us out, they do. And we're so very, very blessed to have that. And we've been able to accomplish a lot of really, really awesome things because of our awesome team over there. I just get to be the guy that's lucky enough to take time and chat with folks like you about it.
Excellent. That sounds great. So obviously today we're going to talk about human trafficking, missile children, gun violence a little bit as well. But first I want to go through a couple of just things that happened in news. I want to pick your brains, guys, on it. First thing is that Trump says that Ivanka doesn't understand elections. He's just way too funny. He's, Ivanka Trump was testifying and she said that she now accepts that there is no evidence of a fraud. And then Trump not tweeted, but whatever you call it, his political truth thing. He said Ivanka Trump was not involved. This is what he said, in looking or studying election results. She's had long since checked out. That was, in my opinion, only trying to be respectful to Bill Barr and his position as Attorney General. He sucked. That's what he said. So what's your thoughts on that? No.
I mean, listen, you have to say that since Trump left office, the presidential briefings have been a lot less entertaining since he's left. That's for sure. Listen. Trump is an interesting guy and the family dynamic is interesting. You know, the way it's reported and the way the media covers all of this, it would be interesting to talk to his daughter and get the specifics about why she feels that way. But it'd be more interesting to get Trump's behind closed doors opinions about what he really thinks about his daughter having that opinion. You know, as far as all that stuff goes, you know, I tend to stay out of the political world because of what I do. I think that unfortunately in my world, I have the very, very dubious job of looking at the bad side of human nature all the time. So, you know, And I've not had great experiences with politicians from either side of the aisle when it comes to trying to get stuff done. So, you know, when it comes to Trump, I'll say this, he was an entertaining guy to have in the White House. You know, but as far as that, it's interesting that his daughter has that take. I'll say that. I find that very interesting.
Danny, what do you think?
And then we'll go with the Trump. I mean, I think that she was like she was under oath when she was testifying. Like there was I feel like there was a less of a duty to kind of like protect her father's ego at that point. And because she could probably I don't know, because I guess it was she's just giving an opinion. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever used Truth Social. The funny thing about that is he goes and he goes on there and they're like, it's supposed to be this free platform. And they've now started banning accounts that are critical of the Great Steal thing or whatever, like the whatever they call it. What's it, the big like it basically, if you say that the election was totally fair and square, they've been starting like banning accounts. But I mean, I don't blame Trump for any, you know, anybody who dissents against them, he's not going to be particularly appreciative of.
And that's why they should never have taken off Twitter, because we don't know what he's up to. Noam, what do you think?
What's the question?
What do you think of Ivanka's, you know, position and Trump's reaction?
Well, I think that Ivanka was telling the truth that when Bill, you know, Bill Barr was, you know, pretty, I mean, I don't want to use the word loyal because that would imply that I'm taking a side on it, but Bill Barr never said anything that disappointed Trump prior to that. So he's got some credibility when he takes a position diametrically opposed to Trump and she spoke candidly about it. I would say that the setup of that committee is such that if there is something that Ivanka said which was mitigating in some way, they would never show it to us because there's no dissent on that committee. So, you know, that disturbs me. It's not that I don't think Trump is behaved horribly or that January 6th was not horrible, all that, but just, you know, I'm saying the same things I believed on January 5th. I'm not changing anything I've always believed, which is that when you have a people with an agenda presenting their side of a story, you can be 100% sure that in some way your certain things are not being brought to your attention. Certain quotes are cherry picked. Certain things that the other side, certain things they might have said, which are, for instance, if Ivanka said something like, yeah, my father was out to lunch on his thing, but he never wanted any violence. Let's just say he said that. They would have never shown the part where Ivanka said, but he never wanted any violence, right? So it's just structurally, it's not a hearing as such. So I take it with, you know, all in that way, but yeah, I'm sure that, I mean, does anybody not think that Trump is full of shit when it comes to this election fraud thing? We all know he's full of shit.
Yeah. I think Ivanka also is being smart about her political career in a way. You know, she probably wants to get something. All right. So I want to get your feedback because I thought that was, I just, when I saw Trump's, I don't know what he called a tweet or Truth,
they're called they're called Truths, and then on the platform they're called Retruths. If you it's the
okay,
most,
so a truth, yeah,
it's the kind worst. Of, it's the it, worst. It's kind of funny.
All right, let's get into the ugly world. You know, so you know, gun violence, school mass shooting, missing children, black market. You know, human trafficking, all that stuff. First, Trent, how did you get involved in that? Why did you want to get involved in that?
Actually, I got involved in this. I did a stint. I've worked for a couple different defense contractors over the years. And in between my stints with defense contractors, I spent about 8 years working in child welfare. And during that time in child welfare, I had a job as what they called the independent living coordinator. So my job was to teach kids how to sign a lease, open a bank account, you know, fill out a job application, all that stuff as they're getting ready to transition from the foster care world to turning 18 and out into the real world, you know? And so through that opportunity, I had the opportunity to work with several young ladies that had been human trafficking survivors, human trafficking victims. And their stories were just absolutely horrific. I mean, we dealt with girls. I had one girl whose pimp had her tattoo his name on her eyelids. I had another one that had been branded with a coat iron. And their stories were just, you know, the kind of stuff that caused you to lose sleep at night. And so,
and this is happening here in the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right here. Right here under our nose, where people don't want to acknowledge, right, that it happens. You talk to a lot of people and they'll tell you that, well, this is a Hollywood problem. You know, this is Hollywooded up. People aren't going to acknowledge that. Or people will tell you, well, this is a problem that happens in third world countries. This is not an American problem. And what people don't want to acknowledge is the fact that this is very, very much an American problem. And it's very much an American problem because we're the consumers. We have the money. We have the people that purchase this stuff. And like every other, if you want to put it in business terms, like every other business, wherever the supply goes is where the demand is. And so right now in the United States, we have a lot of people that are willing to buy this stuff. So that's why it's here. And it's happening every day. It happens in every city in America, every small town in America, from California all the way to New York, it happens. And I still, to this day, when I talk to people randomly and I'm out and about, or when I go to speaking engagements, I still get people that look at me like I'm insane when I tell these stories. And, you know, I wish that were not the case, but, you know, thanks to folks like yourself and having us on stuff like this, we can help kind of get the word out there that this is happening. And so that's how I got involved in all this with dealing with those young ladies. I spoke with my wife and said, you know, I think that, you know, with some of the people I know and some of their capabilities, we may be able to do something. That's how I got involved in all of this stuff over a decade ago now.
Oh, nice. One of my favorite shows was How to Catch a Predator, because yes. I think it had this perfect combination of showing you the ugly world and also a little bit entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely, know? Right.
And I think it was excellent. Danny, you've been in that show before, no? But Danny,
allegedly,
does a lot of,
no,
a
they
lot
didn't
of
have that. Very, they didn't have that show in Canada. So,
oh yeah, you do a lot of popular video, like you're very, you know, popular on social media and stuff like that. Do you ever done anything like that,
like To Catch a Predator kind of thing,
like kind
of
like theme like
a.
That?
On that spoof, no, because generally we try and do stuff that's mostly topical, and I feel like to that kind of stuff is like it's not generally, it's just it's always there, it's never just like momentarily topical.
Yeah,
it's I don't think so. Although me and Ryan Long, we wrote a movie, and in it there was like a strong element of like kind of like an Epstein type character with an island and stuff.
Yeah, that's that. You see, that's why I, you know, this show, like I was saying, like when you have, because when you have both world together, entertainment and ugly truth, it's just a perfect combination. I think that show did a lot for the business. What do you think, Trent?
Well, I think it helped bring up a part of the business to life, yeah. Right? It helped bring the guys that are sitting at home in their mom's basement, you know, having an appropriate conversation with kids to light. And it did add a little bit of a comical spin. You know, it was always entertaining when Chris Hansen would show up, and especially when it was one of the knuckleheads that got busted for the second or third time on that show, that was always the best. And they would have to explain how this happened again. It did help bring that to light. It also helped create like this faction of vigilante groups that have kind of done the industry a little bit of harm and not much good. As far as that goes, because now you've got a whole bunch of different groups now that get online and pretend to be 12 and 13 year old girls, and they talk to these guys, and several of them have like their own YouTube channels, and they'll go out.
Yeah, that's big on YouTube.
Yep, and I get what they're doing, and I understand that their hearts are in the right place, but at the end of the day, they're actually hurting the cause, because what happens then is because they're not understanding what they're doing legally, number one, they usually go about it and wind up falling under entrapment. And then when they go out and they confront these guys, they give their lawyers all sorts of cannon fodder to get them off. And so now it doesn't necessarily make these guys bulletproof for everything they do in the future, but it definitely gives their lawyers.
And the reason that a lot of people doing it, YouTube and social media, just to get popular, just to get views.
Yeah.
It's not for the real reason. And that's why.
Exactly. And like everything that we do in conjunction with law enforcement. So there's not one operation that we run, not one thing that we do where we're just out here on our own, right? Writing our own rules, doing our own thing. Everything that we do is always carefully crafted. It's done alongside law enforcement for that reason.
And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to get you when we had a conversation, because, you know, most people want to be seen and, you know, my face on and in YouTube now. And I'm this show, this very popular show. And but you have your screen block, which I'm going to put in my picture. Norm, you know, I wanted to one time to hire Chris Hansen and walk into your house. Have him walk into your house. It's like, hi, Norm, as a birthday gift, I am Chris Hansen. Sit down. Sit down. Norm, what's your thoughts on that? Would you, with your, you know, your father, and you've been, you know, been protecting and working on that as well a lot, you know.
Working on what?
Working in this show a lot and working in, like, you know, sending a message to your children, to your kids, you know, stuff like that, being a father.
I don't know. I'm not sure I understand the question. What are my thoughts on what?
No, what's your thoughts on human trafficking and it's happening here
in the United States? I'm against it.
Oh, yeah, I know you're against it. I hope you are. No, but about the fact that it's happening actually here, being a father for your kids and stuff. Do you talk to them about it? Like,
human trafficking? No, I don't.
Not talk human about trafficking, but about, you know, the bullying online, the things we see, like a Catch a Predator show.
No, I mean, aside from the very basics that you try to tell your kids about, you know, what they should do what's appropriate and not appropriate for an adult to do with them. You know, we just try to make sure that we're on top of them all the time. My daughter's 10. She's now approaching the years where she'll be more out of my sight and more vulnerable to this stuff. So I will have to think about that stuff. There's always the worry that, you know, that you shouldn't over, let's take school shootings, let's say, you know, you're always torn because, you know, it's so horrible, but it's also such a low probability event that you wonder whether it's even worth scaring them about it. Like, you know, plane crashes and things like this. I don't really know. I don't really have a strong feeling about it. These are things which are unspeakably horrible when they happen to people, and also extremely rare in the sense of adding it to the list of rare things, rare unthinkable things that can happen to someone you love that you don't actually go out of your way to prepare for. Because in a certain way, you can't prepare for these things. Like I said, except for the general risk of a sexual predator to your daughter is high. I would say that's high. Although we all know that overwhelmingly the biggest risks of molestation and things like this are people close to the family. Like, overwhelmingly, that's the biggest risk. So it's all very difficult to process. So I don't have any well thought out thoughts on it. That's the short answer.
Trent, do you have any do any educational part or advice for parents or?
Absolutely, we speak to parental groups, PTA associations, and we also go out and speak to schools. And the stance that I have on it is this: I would rather do one of those speeches every single day. I'd rather do 10,000 of those speeches a year to schools, to parental groups, because those are conversations that I can have on the front end before something bad happens. And those are very pleasant conversations to have. The worst conversations to have are when I get a call at 2 or 3 in the morning on our hotline, or I get an email, or I get a call from a detective saying, listen, we need your help, and something already bad has happened. And then we've got to have a conversation with a crying mom, a crying dad, after something bad's happened. Their child's missing. They're hurt. They're injured. God forbid they're dead. And those are a lot less pleasant conversations to have. And one of the things that we try to talk to people about, you know, the internet has done some fantastic things. I mean, the invention of the internet.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Go ahead.
How many children are disappear a year in America from strangers?
I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I can tell you this.
Approximately.
It's well into the thousands. Well into the thousands. It's much higher than you would think.
I'm gonna this is my computer's crashed, but I'm gonna look that up. I my impression is that it's far less than that. But even let's say it's 1,000. How many people die in swimming pool accidents to your kids? I mean, this is a very, very, very low probability event. No?
Well, you've got to also remember, just missing children is not the only byproduct of this, right? Your kid can be trafficked around the world and never leave their living room. And a lot of people don't know that. So what happens is they'll get online, they'll meet somebody on these video game platforms, they'll meet them in a chat room, social media site, wherever it is, they get groomed all of a sudden. And we actually just had a case of this. They're sending nude photos to some creepo that they've met. Well, that guy then takes it and sells it to his friends. And now next thing you know, your kid's been trafficked into 15 or 20 different countries and they've never left your living room. So there's a lot of components to this.
I think you both make a great point, but I understand, you know, Norm's point is, I mean, life taught me that everything is okay unless it's not, you know, so it's just going to happen. But everybody should be prepared.
I say this with 100% due respect, because what you're doing is a great thing and is a great cause. But I had this experience with this woman named Jo Bowler, too, was like this mathematician from Stanford. And she was talking about, comparing American schools to how they teach math overseas. I'm like, well, she's comparing them to India. I'm like, well, how do they teach math in India? And she said, well, I don't really know that. I'm like, well, I feel like, you know, that to do this, I'm the host of this podcast, so I have responsibility beyond, you know, being civil or like, you know, perfectly deferential to you, which is that I can't present this to the audience if you can't tell me how many people this happens to. It's such an elephant in the room. And I just surprised you don't know, you don't have that answer.
I don't. Like, so
if I speak to like a woman from, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, she'll tell me 6,432 children died in, you know, were killed by drunk drivers. It's such a fundamental statistic.
So
for me to know how to react to the cause.
Do you want the numbers of kids that disappear? Do you want the number of kids that are trafficked? Do you want
anything that you want to tell me is a threat to my child? I expect you. And again, I say this hopefully with kindness. Like Hatim always thinks I should let things go. You know, you don't want to upset the guests, but I'm like, this is, you know, we're having an adult conversation here. It's like, if you want to tell me this is dangerous to my child, the first thing I'm going to want to know is, okay, what's the probability here? How often does this happen? You know, if you want to convince me I should let my child go swimming because kids drown, you have to tell me, is that 10 kids a year, 1,000 kids a year, 100,000 kids a year?
I'm going to cut you off. I'm just Googling it myself, actually. And it's really all over the map, but it's saying that there's a Reuters article here that says this is for actual abductions, not missing, which there's obviously a distinction because missing could be on their own.
But you also have to segregate out abducted by their, like, the parents.
Of course. But just the straight abductions, they say fewer than 350 people under the age of 21 per year. And then, but under the age of 21, but if you're above 18, you're still legally an adult. So
I'm saying that, and you tell me if I'm a horrible parent, I'm just not going to sweat something that happens to 350 people a year, because more than 350 people a year die, you know, just tripping and hitting their head.
Oh, yeah.
No, I completely get where you're coming from. And I'm not going to argue if that's the stance you want to take. But remember, tell me
why it's the wrong stance, because I could make you a list of probably 1,000 different things that have that probability of terrible things that could happen to my kids. No, 350
is 100%. You're talking about that's just one aspect of this. Okay, that's just the missing part. That's not the actual traffic part.
That's one really scary.
Yeah. The trafficking, and I imagine you could correct me, but I imagine you could be trafficked without necessarily being abducted.
You 100%.
Right. That's probably the.
So no, according you can see in your screen, according to what I found, it's actually different numbers, you know, in Australia, Canada, blah, blah. And we go all the way to the United States.
These are reported missing, though. This is not necessarily an abduction, right? Like I've had, you know, correct. You see it all the time. Just like some kid wanders off or has an argument with their parents. They leave and then they run away from home.
But the number is 460,000. So if half of them.
That's reported missing, though.
No, that's completely not.
Yeah, so that's different.
That's kids don't come home after school, whatever.
Yeah, where those numbers come from are they come from runaways. They come from kids that just decide they're not coming home. And the thing is, depending on which entity you look at, the number is going to be different, right? Because there's a bunch of different entities that track missing, at least missing individuals. Everything from NCMEC to NamUs, and everybody has different data.
Let me say the flip side of this, which is disturbing. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with a woman who left, what's her name, Lenore Skenazy, this free-range parenting woman.
No, I'm not familiar with her.
Everybody should Google her. And I know her a little bit personally. She's kind of a fanatic, but she has a very good cause, and her cause is essentially that we scare people so much that our kids are not having the childhood that we had. So, for instance, when I was a kid, I could go to the store, I could walk to school, and I was growing up in Manhattan. Forget about abduction. You know, I mean, the violent crime was a bigger threat to me than any abduction ever was, right? But I grew up to be basically independent. I rode the bus, whatever. Now, I live in the suburbs now. Parents are petrified of their kids walking from point A to point B. They're not allowed to leave their kids home for 20 minutes. Like, everybody has this irrational fear, and it is leading to very, very unhealthy rearing of our children. And my wife is exhibit A here, because she'll read about God forbid something terrible happens to some child in Iowa, and all of a sudden she won't let our kid, you know, walk to the CVS in town. I'm like, sweetheart, this is not rational. So you know, we have to be mindful of.
I agree with everything that you're saying.
How to keep this in perspective, and fundamental to that is you have to know the numbers. You have to.
Well, the thing is, the numbers are different, and I don't spend a lot of time studying the national numbers. I can tell you about the numbers that I deal with every day. Okay. Yeah. And so this is, I can give you several examples, and I understand what you're saying. The chances of your kid being snatched by a random stranger on the way to the store, the way home from school, not a high probability. Now, that being said, let me give you a couple of different examples from my personal world, my personal experience that kind of maybe illustrate. And then let me explain how I like to educate people, because I do agree that we spend far too much time pumping fear into the minds of our kids, the minds of our general public. That's one of my biggest beefs with the media today, is that we live and die on fear. Let's get the fear for the ratings. And I 100% agree with that. So let me give you a couple of examples. I've got one girl, and this is a very, very big case. You can Google it. It's a case out of Arizona, a girl named Alicia Navarro. Okay. This young lady met some bad people online. She decides she's going to leave the house one evening to meet these people. She leaves her mom a note. She takes her cell phone. She takes her laptop. She leaves the house about in the wee hours of the morning.
How old is she?
She was 14 at the time. And here we are 2.5 years later, and she's never been seen or heard from again. Okay. Now, obviously, that's a rare and a worst case scenario. So you're right. It doesn't happen often, but when it happens, it's catastrophic. Okay. Another scenario is this, and we just had this, and I can actually send you this news article. They did a write-up on it down here in the local paper. We had another 14-year-old girl, the aunt and grandma call us. Say, listen, this young lady is a runaway. She's been a chronic runaway. She's run away. I mean, I think this was probably the 10th or 12th time she's run away, to the point to where law enforcement, being understaffed, overworked, have said, listen, we just don't have time to keep going out and grabbing, you know, your niece every time she runs away. We've got other things that we have to do. And this girl, she had a pretty good pattern. Every time she would run away, they would usually find her at the boyfriend's house, and usually just have to go to the boyfriend's house and say, come on, listen, you got to go home. You can't keep doing this. And she would usually go home for a day or two and then, you know, vanish again a couple days later. So we sent a guy over there to the boyfriend's house to knock on the door and say, hey, listen, this got to go home. Well, we start finding out real quickly that things did not transpire the way that we thought. She wasn't there. The boyfriend started getting a little squirrely and had some not so great reasons about why she wasn't there. Fast forward about 12 hours later, we end up finding her in the living room of a 68-year-old man whom her boyfriend had sold her to for drugs. So that's the case where, nope, this girl wasn't grabbed by the stranger in the van. She wasn't grabbed by the weirdo that she met on the internet. She went to her boyfriend's house, and her boyfriend sold her to this guy for dope.
I think it's you know, obviously, you know, the examples are horrible and you're doing a great work, but I think I want to stick with just one thing, because I think Norm had a very good point, not in the in life in general, fear, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes,
we put too much fear in people. So how can we get to a level where we ready the educated enough, but not to the point where it's fear? I think that's actually a brilliant look at it.
And it is.
Because even like say in soccer for me, you know, sometimes they say, oh, coaches, you need to learn how to deal with concussion. Well, I'm not a doctor. Like what's the percentage of concussion happening in a game? 1.0.
In soccer,
you know, but you still, so what is, you know, so why do I have to have this fear and tell the kids about it, and they are now scared to play hard and all that? So I think that's a great point in all fields of life.
No, and I agree. And like I said, I think, and this is one of my huge issues with mainstream media. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's this topic or another topic.
Mm-hmm.
We beat people over the head with fear. Right. We divided and fearful society is one that's easy to control. It's one that the media likes. It generates ratings. And I 100% agree. We make our kids, we make our society scared of everything. If we just simply teach our kids how to be safe, we can do that without teaching them to be fearful. Yeah. And in the internet world, you know, things have changed since the internet's come along. Right. And this is the example that I use. I tell parents, well, you wouldn't take your 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old and drop them off in a room full of strangers that you don't know and let them hang out for the day, right? No real parent would do that. So it starts with our things like our smart devices and our computers and teaching them how to be safe. It starts with teaching parents how to put software like NetNanny on their kids' devices so they can see who their kids are talking to. They can see the websites they're visiting. It starts with teaching kids how to be smart and responsible on the internet, the same way that we teach them how to be smart and responsible in every day, every facet of life. And
but on the flip side, we don't even know how to, I don't know how to be smart in the internet.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Danny, go ahead. You want to say something?
I just was
somebody have something in the background, by the way.
That's, I don't know. I hear
they're
that,
making a sound. Yeah, I don't know.
Buzzing. But just, yeah, the example that you kind of just gave, like, how can that be prevented though? Like, is there, like, with the girl who keeps running away and, like, the boyfriend, like, I just wonder, like, without, like, in getting, I guess maybe you just have to be so incredibly, like, intrusive, but, you know, like, isn't that just, like, the parent's responsibility to kind of mitigate that? Like, how can externally that be
prevented? So some of those things are going to be hard to present, right? I mean, I'm not going to stand here and tell everybody that there's this magic bullet that every parent can do to keep their kid from running away. Sometimes you've got a combination of issues that are going on at home, right, that cause kids to run away, whether it's mental health, whether it's substance abuse, or whether it's something going on in the home. I mean, it could be 1, 2, 3, a litany, a combination of a bunch of different things that cause a child to run away from home. That's where having access to things like mental health services for families makes a lot more sense, right? Because if you can get at the root cause about why a child's running away from home, then you don't have to worry about them running away from home and winding up in those bad situations if you can find out why they're running away and keep that from happening in the first place. So that's one thing that makes a lot of sense. You know, when it comes to the internet stuff, you know, one of the biggest things that we're tracking, and we started tracking this and seeing this a lot more when COVID came up, right? When kids were doing virtual school, when kids were spending more time online, is the meeting of strangers online. And that we saw a huge uptick in that. Our phone rang off the hook with cases like that. I mean, cases not just involving kids, cases involving adults. We had an 18-year-old girl whose mom had called us. And by the time we tracked her down, it was she had been groomed and recruited online, but it ended up not being for trafficking purposes. By the time we located her, she'd already boarded a plane, flown to London, and was in Syria, and had been recruited into an Islamic extremist group all over a guy that she met online. So
I don't think Hatem sees anything wrong with that.
What's that?
Yeah, I was
not sees anything wrong with that.
Islamic group. But what's your thought? It's also just not to cut you up, but also to add to you, it's also sites that doesn't, you know, I have different feelings about it, but sites
Hatem.
Like OnlyFans.
Hatem.
Yeah.
Correct.
Thank God she wasn't recruited. Thank God she wasn't recruited into a Muslim moderate group, right?
They don't recruit anymore. But so sites like OnlyFans, you know, I have different feelings about it, but sometimes it could be like once you into that door or you walk through that door, it's kind of like, you know, you're kind of ready.
I 100% agree with you. I have mixed feelings about some of this stuff as well, because
but on the flip side, just to say that on the flip side, I feel that also OnlyFans is safer than going becoming a stripper in a strip club and have the actual contact with some weirdo that can wait for you outside. So
you're right.
I'm mixed about it.
That's a big social debate too, right? Is sites like OnlyFans and some of these like cam sites that you see pop up,
which I support.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? And it's a valid social debate, because I can tell you this. I'm when it comes to like politics and things like that, I run down a very independent track, you know, and more probably of a libertarian track than anything else. And my thought is, as long as you're not breaking the law and hurting other people, you know, do what you want to do. And, you know, you have the sites like the cam sites, and you have sites like OnlyFans where there have been some cases where girls have been exploited on those sites, and they're turning over their money and whatever they earn to somebody else. And that meets the threshold, right? The legal threshold of force, fraud, or coercion, which you need to meet a trafficking case. Okay. So there have been some sites, but the reality is too, there are some girls that are on these sites that are making money, that are doing this voluntarily, right? And you know, if that's the case, they're not being exploited. They're not, you know, being held against their will. They're not being forced to do anything they don't want to do. You know, morally, whether people agree with it or not, you know.
No, I was talking more about like some couple of kids that happened in OnlyFans that, you know, they start making a lot of money and then they start getting some offers, and then these offers are a trick, you know.
Yes. So that's usually how they get recruited, right? They start making big bucks. They've got a trafficker that says, hey, listen, why don't you come over and work for me? We can triple your money. I've got contacts. We can make this happen. Next thing you know, all the money that they're earning, right, is going to the pockets of somebody else, or a great portion of their money is going to the pockets of this guy, right? And it starts off sometimes is a very, what we call a Romeo pimp, right, where he tells them how beautiful they are, how nice they are, you know, and how lovely they are, and he talks.
You know, I literally knew somebody who named Romeo that did that.
Yep.
He's in jail.
And then it quickly flips over to something else more violent, right? All of a sudden, now they don't turn over X amount of dollars. They don't do this. They don't do that. They get beat for their time, you know, pick a problem. But, you know, and it just legally, I guess, going forward, so everybody listening to the conversation understands what the threshold is to meet a trafficking charge legally, you have to have force, fraud, or coercion involved in that.
Danny, do you think that can somebody be monitored and saved online, especially kids these days, like with all this?
I mean, not without, it's one of those things where...
How can you monitor everything?
You can't. And even if they could, people would probably be resistant to that kind of, like, who's monitoring you, right? Like, who is monitoring you? And do you want to, I mean, parents can monitor their own children, but you want the state having that kind of, like, power of surveillance? Probably not, even if it's possible. I would say probably you would not want that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's another one, and we had couple of guests here before. We had another episode about human trafficking. Is the modeling industry? You know, a lot of I'm sure Trent, you know a lot about that. Yes. They trick you into buy, but at the same time, there's also legit, you know, stuff. Like I 100%. Know a big model that started traveling when she was 12 all over the world. And nothing happened to her.
Well, and that's why the recruiters and the traffickers use things like the modeling industry, right? Because it gives them a somewhat legit cover to be able to recruit people. We've seen things come out of Eastern Europe, and this has been going on for years with Russian organized crime, where they hold job fairs, right, in Eastern Europe, and they tell these girls, you know, listen, we're going to get you to the United States. We're going to put you to work in our restaurants, yes, and our bars, and you can send money back home to your family. And, you know, eventually we'll, you know, help bring your family here. And they basically sell them on the American dream. Right. And then they get them here and all of a sudden somebody stuffs a gun in their face and says, hey, listen, we need your passport. We need your identification. Oh, and by the way, all that money that you were going to make, we'll give you what you need to live on, but we're going to go ahead and take the rest. And so that happens. I mean, that's been happening for years and years as well. So, and we've seen it in the modeling industry where, you know, listen, they go to a modeling shoot, right? They've got some guy that's posing as a photographer, as a modeling company. They get them there. And then, you know, they realize, you know, after about the third or fourth shoot, when they're being asked to take their clothes off, being asked to do inappropriate things, that maybe this is not an above board modeling agency, right? So it's one of those things where the bad guys hide plain sight, and it's easiest for them to hide inside legitimate industries.
Yeah. And we just saw R. Kelly thing. They want to send him to 25 years in jail. Speaking of,
you know, if R. Kelly never got out of jail, the world would be a better place. You know, he's, the things that he did and the things that he's on video doing should put him away for the rest of his life. And the stuff that he was so blatant about, I don't know if you've seen that clip of him singing in, I want to say it was somewhere in South Africa, where he's literally standing up on stage singing about, if you have your passport and you want to come to America, you know, come find him. And, you know, I mean, it's blatant trafficking behavior that we've seen from R. Kelly. And, you know, the fact that he was able to get away with it for so many years just because of who he was is indicative of some of the problems, right, that exist in our justice system.
He somehow married a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Legally.
Is that legal?
Yeah, I guess America has some pretty wild rules about,
I believe the age, got the
that age. Yep. Yeah. You can get married in America very young to someone who's over 18. If there's parental
consent signs
in
off.
Certain states, I believe, yep. California has no minimum age for marriage.
What?
And there's a couple other states. Yeah. Cause there's Tennessee. They were proposing some, law recently, and then that they were kind of getting, you know, I guess dunked on, but they're about, I believe they were trying to lower the minimum age for marriage, and then there's multiple states in the US that have technically no lower bound for marriage, as long as certain things are certain requirements, like like if you're pregnant and parental like permission consent. Or whatever. Yeah, consent. It's pretty wild.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I thought these things only happen in the other part of the world, like Israel. Mm-hmm. But but I don't know. So to get you know the benefit of this, what would be the advice? What would you say in general to, you know, to everybody? You know, especially like a lot of sports, film. You know, we saw Epstein. You know, all these things now start with a very young age. You know, and the younger generation, it's a lot about, you know, being popular and. In social media and all the want the attention. So what would your words of wisdom be, Trent?
Well, I think we start with we don't need to live in fear, right? I mean, I think that's something that we need to take away from this is we need to start and stop with. I agree with everybody here. We need to take the fear mongering out of everything, and we just need to be smart about how we teach our kids to behave online. You know, okay, if you're going to play video games, that's fine. Play video games. Go into chat rooms on things like Discord. But, you know, parents, especially depending on the age of the child, this is where I think kind of common sense comes in. And it goes back to the statement that I made earlier in the podcast, and that is you wouldn't take your kids to a room full of unknown adults and just drop them off for the day and just let them hang out. Well, you know, if you have your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old with a smart device, with an iPhone, with an iPad, anything that they can connect to the internet without restriction, right? If you don't have a software on there, if you aren't keeping track of their screen time, you've essentially dropped your kid off in a world with unrestricted access to unknown adults. And so a lot of it starts and finishes with common sense. Just like we had stranger danger 20, 30 years ago, right? When we were all growing up and they used to tell you, well, if you saw the creepy guy in the playground or you saw the creepy guy in the park, run and tell an adult, run and tell a police officer. And then, you know, when you get home at night, you can lock your windows and you can lock your doors and you can keep the bad guys out, right? Times have changed. So we can't do that anymore. You can lock your windows and you can lock your doors, but the bad guys still come in through the computer screen and through the smart devices. And so a lot of it starts with parents understanding, you know, what kids are doing online, have a presence in your kids' online life, especially if they're younger. I understand when they get to be teenagers, that's going to be a lot harder to monitor. It's going to be a lot harder to police, and there's going to come a point in time when, just like everything else in life, right, you're going to have to educate your kids the best you can, but then trust that they're going to make good decisions. That's just part of growing up, part of the learning curve. But with younger kids, the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old kids, you know, if they've got a smart device, number one, put some software on there, monitor what they're doing, teach them how to behave appropriate online. Okay. Teach them if people start asking them certain questions, if people start wanting them to send photos, if people start wanting them to send personal information, that they need to cut that off immediately. They need to block that person immediately and then let somebody know. Okay. So it's just about teaching our kids to be responsible, teaching the parents, you know, because one of the other issues that we're seeing a lot now, right, is we've got a group of kids that are growing up on technology, right? All these kids in today's world, they've never known anything but technology, video games, Discord, all of this stuff. And then we've got a gap where we've got parents that didn't grow up with this stuff. So they don't understand how this stuff works. They don't understand how VPNs work. They don't understand how Discord works.
I mean, even if you understand, like, yep. If you understand Instagram, then TikTok comes and something
exactly.
else.
It just exactly. Like,
yeah. So I mean, I use Discord. I barely understand how it works.
Yeah,
exactly. So I guess the short answer is let's teach our kids how to be safe, responsible, and smart online without teaching them how to be fearful.
What about the laws? Are they tough enough?
What's that?
The laws, are they tough enough?
You know, So the laws, like everything else in our world, I don't think the laws have caught up with the technology curve, right? We're still trying to figure out how to deal with some of this stuff and how to sense some of this stuff. As far as sentencing goes and what these guys are held responsible to, I think that there needs to be a lot stiffer. You know, we'll take a guy that has a drug offense and we'll lock him up for 20 or 30 years, but we'll take a guy who has a known track record of abusing kids, exploiting women, hurting women. And then these guys are known dangers to the community. We'll lock them up for 10 years and then let them go back out in the community. A good example of that is another case that we were involved in. And this is this case was actually just all over the news. A young lady named Brittany Drexel from South Carolina. She, once again, so this just goes to show that, you know, one thing that we all have to take into account is kids are still going to be kids, right? Kids are going to sneak out of the house. Kids are going to do the things that they say they're not going to do. Okay. But what she did is she snuck out of her house spring break. I believe it was back in 09. She sneaks out of the house, goes with a bunch of friends to spring break in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. She is driving down, or she's walking down the street in Myrtle Beach after she has a little disagreement with some of her friends, and a guy pulls up next to her. We're not sure how the conversation went. We know that he was able to talk her into getting into his car, and he killed her, raped her, strangled her, and buried her outside of Myrtle Beach. Now, the body was actually just found about 2-3 weeks ago. They just arrested this guy 2 or 3 weeks ago. But when we started digging into this guy, what we had found out is that he was already doing 40 years okay, in prison in California for sexually assaulting a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. He got paroled early and was let go to his parents' house in South Carolina and was on supervision when this happened. So, and that's just one example. There's numerous examples of released sexual deviants, released sexual predators that we know are dangerous to the community, that we release back into the community, that end up committing further egregious crimes, crimes worse than the original ones they were accused of. So in regards to that, I think the laws have to be tougher about keeping these guys in jail longer and making sure that they're better supervised when they're released.
Daniel, what do you think? I think entertainment has a lot to do with it. Also, like I said, you know, Catch a Predator, a lot of Law and Order episodes, like it can subconsciously teach people not only about the kids what to do, but also the people that are thinking about it, how bad it can get it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, obviously like awareness of it is
what are you going to do about Danny?
What am I going to do about it? I'm just going to keep making funny videos and doing podcasts to raise awareness. Yeah. I don't know. It's just something that I feel needs to be done at a government level. I don't know that necessarily an individual, unless you have kids, obviously. And then you're just kind of, you are the government at that point of your children. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough issue. There's always the same with the gun stuff where everybody's like, well, we need more of this, more of this, more of this. And you're like, yeah, but they have a lot of that stuff, and stuff always seems to fall through the cracks because the incentive structure to stop these people is not, I guess, set up properly.
Noam, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I agree with what he said. You know, I mean, we as parents need to stay on top of our kids. I mean, it's just that we need to be on top of our kids.
Did you guys watch the show Mindhunters? I think it was, you know, there was a case where there was like a guy getting kids and stuff like that. And they did something, you know, where they had the cops going in undercover cars and try to talk to kids. And when the kids come, they will tell them the cops don't ever talk to strangers, you know, and yell at them and kind of scare them. I don't know if that works, but, you know.
I mean, with the sort of like era where every kid has a cell phone now, I mean, the shooting in Texas is like the ultimate thing where you go, people are like, look, you can rely on these people to help you. And then they show up and they don't help you. So you're like, what do you do there? What do you tell a kid? That's like the kids did the right thing. They called 911. They did everything. And then the cops show up and they just stand there like, you know. What do you do?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example of one of the presentations that we do in school. And this usually has a pretty good effect. So what we'll do is if I find out this, and I usually do this with the junior high age population, you know, and when we find out we're going to go speak to a school, I'll tell the teacher, listen, get me all of the kids' social media handles in the classroom. I want all of them. And we create some of our UC accounts, our undercover accounts, and we spend the next 2 or 3 weeks before we go speak to the school making friends with the kids, and we get them to friend us. And I'll stand up in front of the school and in front of the kids, and what I'll say is, you know, listen, how many of you accept friend requests on social media from people that you don't know? And of course, they're kids, right? Nobody's going to raise their hand. Nobody's going to tell you the truth. Oh, we don't do that, right? So then I stand up there with my cell phone and I start sending direct messages. And I just wait for the kids to start looking down at their phone. And I've got the names.
Hakan?
Yeah.
I have to sign off 5 minutes early or 3 minutes early. I have to go.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Thank you. Bye.
Have a good one.
Bye. Trent, keep going. Keep going.
And so all of a sudden, the kids will start checking their phones, and I've got the names, and I'll say, oh, well, Susie, did you just get a message from Angela 54123 or whatever the name I've created is? And she'll be like, oh, well, yeah. Do you know who that is? And she says, oh, well, it's a friend. I said, no, it's not. I said, it's me. I said, you've been talking with me for the last 2 weeks. And so when you can do stuff like that and stand up in front of them and show them that that's what's happening and that can happen, it tends to have an effect. Now, it has an effect for knowing kids, you know, especially teenagers. It has probably a shock effect for a week or two, and then they'll go back to doing, you know, whatever it is we're doing. But at least illustrates a picture that everything online is not what it appears. And that's the biggest problem that we're fighting in today's world is these kids take everything at face value. And part of that is because, and it's a good thing. Part of it is our kids are still very innocent, right? And they don't want to, and they don't know that there are people in the world that want to hurt them. Yeah. They don't know there are people in the world that want to cause them harm. So they don't have that mechanism yet. And that's a good thing. I mean, I would love to have a world where kids never had to worry about that. And hopefully we can create that someday. I don't know if we can, but, and that's part of the problem is it goes back to, once again, not creating fear, but creating awareness and helping our kids be more self-aware because we can't police them all the time.
Yeah. And when we grew up, awesome. I mean, we didn't have a lot of this, all this technology and all these things or education. And we kind of knew who the weird guy was.
Exactly.
Danny, you want to say something?
I mean, yeah, like I agree. You know, that wasn't something we had to deal with. Like, you know, when I was a kid, if someone wanted to abduct you, they had to physically, or, you know, they wanted to harm you, it had to be in person.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They couldn't do it from, you know, the other side of the world, whereas now they can. And I mean, at the same time with what Trent was saying, like, I know people, you know, I don't know if you get this, but on Facebook, I'm constantly getting, you know, requests from like what are clearly super, super poorly made fake accounts. And then you go look and I have 10 friends, mutual friends in common.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, because it's like even people I know are still fooled by this. I don't know the degree to which they're maybe conversing with them, but I bet some of them are.
And that's the thing is like a lot of people just want to have more followers. So they will just accept. It's all about.
But this is like on Facebook. This isn't even like these are friend requests. They're not even followers. So it makes even less sense, to be honest.
You know
like,
what I'm going to do after this show? I'm going to go to your Facebook and see how many we have in common.
of the bots.
Natasha 555 is not one of them. Well, unfortunately, you know, this show comes to an end. It's been an hour, but you know, it's a heavy episode, but it's necessary. You know, it's the world we live in, you know, and I think everybody have a responsibility and, you know, just because it's a bad world in certain ways, there's also good people and good parts of the world. And Trent, thank you for doing what you're doing. And if you want to tell us, our listeners, how can people help or be involved if they can? Or how to follow you, or you know, you can share any social media you like if you want.
No, absolutely. So if you'd like to get involved in any way, whether it's volunteer, you know, we're a 501c3. So we work strictly on donations. That's how our budget is built. So if you want to volunteer, you want to make a donation, you can go to our website, www.antipredatorproject.org. We also, to kind of help fund what we're doing, we create a clothing line. And this clothing line is it's an anti-slavery, pro-freedom clothing line. And it's called apparel. And if you would like to go, all the money from that's raised from apparel goes directly back into our cause and helping our teams travel around and assist law enforcement with these issues. If you'd like to go there and check us out, it's www.getapparel.org. And from there, you can click on and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I don't think we've branched off into the TikTok world yet. I don't have enough interns to be able to run that, but that's where you can find us. And like I said, we'll, from there, you can purchase stuff from our clothing line. You can go to our other website, make a donation, or if you want to volunteer, I never turn down volunteers. There's always something for someone to do.
Yeah. And Danny, you want to share your information where people can find you and all that?
You can find me at Danny Jokes on all social media. And then every Friday, new episodes of The Boys Cast. And actually, we're going to be doing more than one new episode a week. And then also every Tuesday night, live on YouTube at 9 p.m. Eastern, I do a kind of call-in radio type show called Low Value.
Oh, I just saw that. Is that new?
I've been doing it for about... It's new for this year. I think we've done almost 20 episodes. I think we've done 18 episodes once a week, but every Tuesday night, it's just like kind of like coast to coast, or it's really just a talk radio show that I do live on YouTube every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Low Value.
What's the channel?
It's just, if you just search Low Value Mail, M-A-I-L, but it's just right on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/my name, Danny Paulschuk. And then, and if people want to call in, we usually talk about whatever's, it's basically like a podcast where the listener gets to be on the show.
That's which awesome.
I mean, it's a talk radio show. They've been going
for
50 years, but I'm not reinventing anything here except for that it's on YouTube.
There you go. Well, guys, thank you so much. As I said, this was heavy, but it's, you know, it's necessary. And we love to do this stuff like that from time to time to, raise awareness and all that. And Trent, thank you for what you do. Danny, thank you for being here, and I'll see you soon.
Appreciate
hopefully. All right, yep. You guys,
absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. And this is Live from America podcast. Have a good one.